The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical principles and wisdom. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you actually own are helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? I think I said that backwards. But there's so much peace of mind that you can, when you sense that your money is aligned with your values and convictions, and there really, really is peace of mind when you know that your financial goals are in sync as well with your values and convictions. When that doesn't happen, there's anxiety and it's not good.
That's right, James. Yeah. But that's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day, it can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all of this information straight can be downright confusing and possibly even scary.
Possibly scary, that's right. And when you're confused or scared, you simply don't make good decisions. Mm-mm. And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be. And it can hurt you pretty badly as well.
That's right.
Right. Well, welcome to episode 19, Money and Mission. And I'm James.
And I am Eric.
And right across the desk from me is Joe.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yeah. Well, anybody that's listening, good afternoon, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And over there's Crystal, who I don't think we've ever, this is like the first time we've ever seen Crystal here, but she is here.
Hello,
so
hello.
A great big thank you to the folks here at Holy Family Radio for letting us crash their studio for an hour every week. Part of the way through the show, we'll get to our weekly puzzler as well. A weekly puzzler is just a brain teaser that we share, and we never know if it's interesting to anybody but us, but
we hope so.
We hope so. That's exactly right.
So let's jump right in, James.
Yeah.
Our week in review. What would you say was a financial news highlight from this past week?
Yeah. Well, before we say that, I just want to say if there's only one thing, right, mm-hmm. that you, our listeners, there's only one thing you take away from our conversation here today, that is that even though details may change around us, principles remain the same.
That's right.
Right. Principles remain the same, even though details change. And we've got to keep that in mind because it's so easy to look at a different set of details and say, oh, my goodness, everything's different now. But the principles that we're really building on remain the same. So we've talked about the national debt.
Oh, boy.
Before.
Yep. 35 trillion now?
And
counting? 35 trillion and counting?
And counting. In eight weeks, the national debt jumped by about $500 billion.
Oh,
in 8 weeks. Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
According to the Bipartisan Policy Center, which you can look up, just Google Bipartisan Policy Center, the U.S. Treasury had a $381 billion deficit during the month of August.
In 1 month.
1 month.
Wow.
You remember Ronald Reagan, mm-hmm. back in the day, had the reputation of the big borrower, right? And during the Reagan years, I think the national deficit reached $200 billion in a year. a year.
And now we're talking about 1 month.
1 month.
Right.
1 month.
Uh-huh. Inflation aside.
That's wow. It's like unbelievable, right? Right? 300, almost twice the annual deficit in 1 month.
Mm.
I was thinking about this and I thought, where are all those jobs? Remember all the jobs that keep getting created? Like those jobs should create revenue.
And you, the ones that were revised down?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the ones that were revised down. Yeah. You know, because honestly, if the jobs were there, that would be creating tax revenue.
Of course.
Which would show up in the treasury, which doesn't quite equate with such an enormous deficit.
Doesn't equate with bad spending. With bad spending patterns as well, yeah.
Bad spending patterns as well. So, well, my goodness. The history, though, I was just curious. I was really curious. Where did this whole thing get started? And, you know, back in the Revolutionary War, coming out of the Revolutionary War, I guess the nation really got started with a debt of about $75 million. Because, the nation overspent, there wasn't any revenue, and to fund the Revolutionary War, there was a debt
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day. So that was in 1791. Well, then, I can't remember which president in line, where did Andrew Jackson come? He was one of the next presidents in line somewhere along the way. And the national debt actually reduced to zero.
Mm.
It
balanced the books.
They balanced the books by January of 1835.
Wow.
So there was a point in time in our nation's history when there was no federal debt.
Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to get back to that point. Or at least make an attempt.
People aren't even talking about it. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about it, but it feels like we're like odd people out or something.
Well, we're talking about these large numbers and millions and billions and now $35 trillion in debt. What gets me the most is the interest that we're paying on
that. Oh, my goodness.
The
amount of interest that's paying on that is phenomenal.
It is. And I looked into it. And 2023, the U.S. paid an estimated $726 billion in interest alone.
I'm going to say that number again. Seven?
$726 billion.
Just in interest.
Just in interest. And the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, they project $1.7 trillion by 2034.
In interest.
Not even paying down the principal.
Just interest.
Just interest.
Wow. That's a far cry from Andrew Jackson at zero.
And it's roughly 13% of our total federal spending.
Interest.
Yes.
Is about 13%.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. So, just bouncing back, I guess, coming out of the Civil War, we were at $65 million in debt.
Mm-hmm.
$65 million back in 1860.
Five.
1865. Well, no, we were $65 million going into the Civil War.
Oh, going in.
Coming out of it, we were at $2.7 billion.
Oh.
But still, that's a big jump from $2.7 billion to just one point something trillion just for interest.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we've come a long way, right? By the end of World War I, the national debt, the total debt was at $22 billion. By the end of World War II, $51 billion. And then, from 1980 to 1990, the debt tripled. And here we are with these just astounding numbers.
Wow.
So, but we hear two different terms. Sometimes we hear deficit and debt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's two different things, right? A deficit is the amount of money that you overspend. The debt is the amount of money you owe.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're overspending, like all the interest you were talking about adds to the deficit.
All that overspending turns into debt.
Turns into debt.
Right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
you can't foot the bill.
That's right. And it just keeps piling up and piling up.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, those numbers become real.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes people wonder, well, how in the world does this all affect me?
Sure.
Right?
It's important.
I mean, because we've seen these numbers, they get so big, they're almost unreal. And the question is, well, how does this really affect me? I mean, virtually every living person today.
Well, we talked about if you lined up all the dollar bills, how far would it go here from, to the sun, like 30 times?
Yeah,
I forget what you found
out.
Yeah,
it was a big number, right?
Mm-hmm.
But every single person alive today has been living in a world where we just have this phenomenal amount of overspending.
Just going part on. Of life, it seems.
That's right.
Part of government.
So we really don't know what it would feel like to actually pay down the debt. We do. I mean, on a personal level, if people pay down their debt, they have to tighten their belt. Maybe they either have to earn more so they can pay down debt, or they have to spend less so that they can pay down debt.
That's what the government needs to do.
That's what the government needs to do.
They need to bring in more revenue through taxes, or they need to stop spending so much.
Right. But either way, that involves pain. Right? Because either somebody needs to pay more in taxes, or somebody needs to receive less in like benefits or projects, any place where the government is currently sending.
Or enlarge the pie.
Or enlarge right. the pie.
Mm-hmm. So workers coming from overseas, that'll add to the amount of people who pay.
Well, that would. That's true.
Increasing the amount of kids that we're having because we're having like a declining ratio right now.
Right.
That would help support future revenue.
That's right. Yeah. By expanding the number of people who are actually earning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely right. But, you know, the interesting thing, we talked about principles, how principles don't change in the Bible, right? In the book of Proverbs, we read the borrower is the servant to the lender. And I feel like we should just repeat what we said at the very beginning, that if you only remember one thing out of a topic like this, you know, the national debt thing, it's that details change, but principles really remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that strikes me too, because looking at who holds the debt, it looks about 30% is held by foreign entities, and the remaining 70% by individuals, institutions.
That's right.
Reserve.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the borrower is the servant to the lender. So if we've been spending all this extra money and, you know, one really has to ask whether or not we've created wealth or if we've created a lot of servitude instead. I used to think that this warning about debt was a warning to the would-be borrower, but it could be a warning to the lender as well. And that's something we should probably talk about sometime.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll touch on our debt more in the future.
That's right.
But we need to take a break now and listen to some of our supporters. We'll be back. You are listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are continuing our discussion of one of my favorite topics. Individual retirement accounts.
That's right. So why don't we recap for folks
sure.
what we went over last week before we jump in.
You didn't know that was one of my favorite topics, did you?
I had a feeling.
You had a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it ranks right up there.
Built a business around it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've only been, you know, advising people in this for, what, 30 years or more?
Right.
Yeah. So people ask me sometimes, how long have you really been in this business? And I always have to think about my oldest son because he was just turning a year old when I was getting into the business. And so whenever I forget, I go back to see how old he is and then I subtract away. And for a guy who does math, right, that should be helpful. Anyway, sorry to ramble. We are continuing our conversation of individual retirement accounts. Where did we leave off?
Well, I would say we went through some of the history and the changes over the years.
We did. That's right.
We got in a little deep to the two common ones, the traditional and the Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we left off where we mentioned some of the other less common ones, the simple, the SEPs. et cetera.
Then the SARSAPs, mm-hmm. and the beneficiary IRAs. And I remember Joe Nebesinski was sitting over there saying, okay, guys, this is really technical. That's right. And, you know, it really is. There's a lot of rules associated with these things called individual retirement accounts. There are a lot of rules, which is why it's a really advisable that you work with a knowledgeable and competent financial advisor. And a CPA doesn't hurt either to really be involved in helping you to navigate the finer points of IRAs and how to go about planning with these things. Did we talk about what all you can invest in?
No, I think that's where we need to pick up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really, we could probably talk for the rest of the year about IRAs and not quite cover all the rules. But again, there are different types of things. So IRAs really were set up by Congress to allow American people to, or American taxpayers, to invest money on a tax advantage basis to save up for eventual retirement. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the IRS got involved in implementing those rules. And that's where then the IRS said, okay, dear taxpayer, there's a list of things that you're allowed to invest in and a list of things that you're not allowed to invest in after you have this account set up. So of course, there are bank CDs, right?
Certificate of deposits.
Certificate of deposit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Most banks and credit unions are eligible financial institutions and they can issue IRAs. So it's a very interesting thing. If you set up an IRA at a bank or a credit union and your money is in a certificate of deposit, if you didn't know about the other investment possibilities out there, you might be thinking, oh, an IRA is this interest-bearing account and it doesn't grow very much. And
right.
And you might just kind of be living with that assumption.
Mm-hmm.
And that wouldn't be correct because there are other types of investments that you can make in an IRA.
Sure. Like bonds. You can hold bonds in an IRA.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. right. Yeah, you can hold bonds. Same thing, right? So let's pretend you have an IRA set up and you only ever
just have bonds.
And you only ever invested in bonds. You just didn't know that any other kind of investment vehicle could be used in an IRA account. Then you might come away from that IRA experience thinking, wow, this is the way IRAs work. and really what you're thinking about is this is the way bonds work.
Right.
Right. So what else can we hold in an IRA?
Individual stocks.
Individual stocks.
Stocks and companies, publicly traded.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, in that case, you would set up a brokerage account,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's a number of companies that serve as custodians of brokerage accounts. But once you have that brokerage account open and it's set up properly as an IRA, then, as you said, you can buy stocks in that of virtually any company that's publicly traded.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the same kind of caveat there is that let's pretend that the only experience you ever had with IRAs is that you open a brokerage account and you are invested in stocks. Let's pretend you didn't know anything about certificates of deposit. You didn't know anything about bonds. You might come away from that experience thinking,
well, my retirement plan fluctuates.
yeah, that's right. Either it's really risky or I made a lot of money, mm-hmm. depending how you know, if you made money or lost money in those stocks.
Sure.
And so, but again, you know, what you're experiencing is how stocks work. Not right. necessarily, not in that case, the example that I just made, you're not drawing a conclusion about IRAs. You're more drawing a conclusion about stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, mutual funds, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have an IRA that's invested in mutual funds.
Which are essentially, we've talked about them before, but they're just a wrapper
mm-hmm.
for stocks. So you don't own the actual stock of the company, but you hold a wrapper with pooled money that's representative of those holdings.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, even when you own stocks and bonds, you can screen those stocks and bonds to make sure that there's alignment with your values, right? So if you've done that homework, and then you have an IRA that is in alignment with your values. And we've talked already about how you can review mutual funds. And a couple of weeks ago, we had Nathan Parrott on here from the Timothy Funds. You can go back and listen to that episode. And there we were talking about biblically responsible investing. So you can do that in your IRA.
Right.
Right.
And we work with our clients a lot about that.
We do. That's exactly right. But there again, mutual funds, there's different types of mutual funds. Some mutual funds invest in stocks. Some invest in bonds. Some invest in precious metals. Some mutual funds, you know, invest
real estate investment trusts.
Yeah, so there's all different kinds of mutual funds. So let's pretend you set up an IRA and you have mutual funds in your IRA. Well, depending what type of mutual fund is in your IRA or what combination of mutual funds is in your IRA, you would may come, if you didn't know about anything else, right, you might come away from that thinking that is how an IRA works. But again, you're more drawing a conclusion about that's how mutual funds work, not necessarily just that's how an IRA works. So depending how you have your IRA set up, you know, you might have some mutual funds, you might have some individual bonds, you might mix up some of those different investment types. And again, if you're not sure how to do that, I mean, that's one thing that we work with clients on all the time. And, you know, a good financial advisor should be able to help you there. Well, there are, I mean, if that wasn't complicated already, I mean, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, Joe, how complicated was that?
Way above my pay grade.
So there is an even more complicated type of IRA called a self-directed IRA. And what we were talking about so far is IRAs that invest in investment vehicles where the price of those investments is readily available. So what happens is that at the end of each year, the custodian of the IRA, the bank, the brokerage company, the mutual fund company, whatever, they need to fill out a report and send it to the IRS that reports what the value is of the assets that are held in that IRA. And when you get into self-directed IRAs, then you start holding assets that are not as easily valued. And that gets very complicated very quickly. So why don't we, let's get to our weekly puzzle.
Sure.
And we can pick up and see where we leave off.
We've got some time left.
We actually have another minute. So, so let's see how fast we can talk, right?
Yeah. Well, I know you talked about beneficiaries. So what about inherited IRAs?
We want to cover that in a minute?
I don't know. We can let it bleed to the next segment.
Well, you brought it up here. So we want to do it in a minute. No, so a beneficiary IRA is when you receive an IRA where you were named as a beneficiary, someone else died, and you were named as a beneficiary on that IRA. And let's talk more about that in the next segment. But now you have a beneficiary IRA, and there are really specific rules that you have to follow. We won't be able to cover all of those rules here on the podcast today, but we'll just do some highlights about how that works. A couple of things you can't invest in, like you can set up an IRA, but you can't buy life insurance. You can't buy collectibles. Collectibles like fine arts or antiques, toys.
Bottles of wine.
Yeah. Comic books, stamps, musical instruments.
Rugs.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. So none of that can go in an IRA.
All right. Well, let's get to our weekly puzzler. How about I'll do last week's and you can read off this week.
Sure.
So last week's puzzler was, my first is nothing but a name. My second is less. My whole is of so little fame, it has no name at all. What am I?
Well, my first is nothing but a name. My second is less. My whole is of so little fame, it has no name at all. What am I?
Nameless. You have no name at all.
Nameless.
That hurt, didn't it, Joe?
Oh, that hurt.
That was a little painful.
Well, this week's is actually better. This week's is actually better. Like, that was a pretty low bar, probably, but this week's is actually better. What has a head, but no brain, and no body?
What has a head, but no brain, and no body?
Yeah. Send your responses to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we'll read the correct answer to the puzzle on next week's show.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We need to take a break. We're going to listen to some of our supporters. You are listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Christ, Community, Catholic. You're listening to Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Nourishing our Catholic family, sharing our faith with others.
Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. Right here in Shiremanstown, Pennsylvania.
Beautiful downtown Shiremanstown.
Beautiful downtown Shiremanstown.
Beautiful historic downtown Shiremanstown. Historic,
yeah. How many different descriptors can we...
pass that on the way in.
That's right. Right next to the post office. Too, right? Big landmark there. I mean, why don't they say the post office is right next to Holy Family Radio? I mean, so, that would be viable, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
You got off track again, Jim.
Yeah. We're supposed to be talking about money and mission. All right. Thank you for getting me back on track. But if you're in the neighborhood, stop in.
This historical landmark.
Stop in. And people can just stop in, can't they, Joe?
Yeah, we're here Tuesdays and Thursdays pretty much all day.
Tuesdays?
They can stop in. We'll give them the 5-cent nickel tour.
Right. That's right. And Joe and Joe are always, they're such great guys to visit with and to work with. But anyway, well, back to Money and Mission. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are continuing our conversation about IRAs.
Yes.
Individual retirement accounts.
We left off on inherited IRAs.
That's right.
And we were saving it for this segment because there's some rules going on there, right?
There's some rules going on, yeah. And the rules are just complex. Like, if you want to look up all the rules that you could possibly ever think of about IRAs, you could look at IRS Publication 590.
Which one?
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Because...
it's really thick, and there's two of them.
That's right.
There's Part A and Part B.
That's right. Publication 590, Part A, which is really all about putting money
going in
to so like how much you can put in, and what happens if you put in too much, and or if you're allowed to at all, and whether you can take a tax deduction, and all that is in Publication 590A. I think. Publication 590A is 61 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that publication references other publications. And so possibly it's even more complicated than that. But Publication 590B then is all about
money coming out,
taking money out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly, Publication 590B is 69 pages long.
Hmm.
So it's even longer than the first one.
So they just want the money in, not too many rules. But when it's going about coming out, they're going to be sticklers.
There's even more rules, right? So there's no way we'll cover all of that information here. But again, we'll reference it. If you are so inclined and you would like to read all of that information, you can go to the IRS's website, www.irs.gov. And in the top right-hand corner, you'll see a search field. In the search field, type in the number 590, and click enter, and then you'll be presented with a list of links, and publication 590A and 590B will be one of those.
You can download a PDF.
That's right, one of those links. And the IRS presumably updates these each year to reflect updates to the rules and so on and so forth. So again, we're not going to cover all of that here, but we'll highlight a few things. So yeah, so we were talking about beneficiary IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would say a big difference would be between spouse and non-spouse.
It is, mm-hmm. Yeah. But in general, so if you have an IRA, then you need to make a choice about where that money goes when you die. And you can either, like, you can name a natural person or a non-natural person. So a non-natural person might be, like, if you named your church as the beneficiary of your IRA, which sometimes people do. Or, like you said, you could name a spouse as an IRA beneficiary, and you could name your children or your neighbor or your best friend.
Or your dog.
Or, well, I don't know. I've never.
It'll have to go to the person who cares for it. But
yeah, I have no experience.
There's ways.
Do you know? I mean, can you name?
I've heard of stories. I haven't.
Yeah.
Back when I was doing employee benefits.
Uh-huh.
Yep. If you have a favorite dog, you can name it to them, but it goes to the custodian of the animal, and it's used for the benefit of the animal.
Yeah.
Wasn't there some lady that had a cat, lives in this big mansion somewhere, and the caretaker is taking care of the cat, and the cat's in this multi-million dollar mansion.
Like, I think there's a documentary out there on
something
that.
Like that.
Yeah. I've heard of that
as well. We should look that up. That would be fun to talk about. You know, we should also try to get Mary Jo Mullen.
Mm-hmm. She knows
here.
A lot.
Yeah, Mary Jo is an attorney, and we think she's a wonderful, wonderful person. Mm-hmm. And we really have to make a point.
And a supporter of Holy Family Radio, by the way.
And she is a supporter of Holy Family Radio.
So yeah, mm-hmm. Get her in here.
Get her in here. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll work on that. But anyway, so the point is, you can name a beneficiary, right? And you should name a beneficiary, because if you don't, then the money in your IRA just goes to your estate.
Mm.
And if that happens, then you lose tax benefits that otherwise you would obtain, or you would be able to achieve tax benefits.
And you might not be happy about how those assets get dispersed.
Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. So, let's kind of maybe start with the spousal.
Sure.
IRA, right? So somebody names their spouse. And then their death occurs, and the spouse now receives that IRA as a spousal IRA.
And there's more flexibility there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the spouse really, you know, can treat the IRA as their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if everything is structured the right way, it's a really straightforward.
Now, do they technically take it over, or would they have to roll it over into one of their own?
Well, what happens is that it simply gets retitled as their, and they can merge it with one of their own IRAs. It literally becomes a spousal IRA. Literally becomes the surviving spouse's IRA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the most flexible situations that ever would occur. If you leave your tax-deductible IRA to your children as an inheritance, you could end up with some unintended tax consequences. So let's pretend, I mean, remember, if you have a deductible IRA where money that went into the IRA, you got a tax deduction for that, and now the money was growing and it was never taxed. That means whenever the money comes out of the IRA, whoever receives it is going to pay tax at whatever tax rate they happen to be in that year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and if they're close to that line, it might push them into the next bracket.
Right. That's right. So let's say that maybe you have always had a fairly modest income, and taking a tax deduction was a really good idea for you because you figured you'd be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. And as life turned out, that actually was true. So you were in a lower tax bracket, but you have money that you've accumulated in this IRA, and this money has never been taxed. And your daughter was just brilliant and blessed and went to school and eventually went to medical school and became a surgeon. And your daughter is in a really high tax bracket. And you have your daughter named as a contingent beneficiary. So eventually you and your spouse pass away and the money in your IRA goes to your daughter. Your daughter has to take the money out of the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
In today's rules, if your daughter is not a well, she wouldn't be a minor child because she's a doctor, right? So we'll follow through on our example.
She's really smart and did it really fast.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. But there she is. And so she's earning a surgeon's salary and she has to take this money out in a really, really high tax bracket, which was probably not what you intended when you set up the IRA in the first place.
And probably what she didn't see coming.
And yeah, she didn't see coming.
Mm-hmm.
So
good planning is important.
Good planning is important. We know of one story, which kind of worked the other way around. A child was named as a beneficiary, but when the child showed up, or as the child was in the process of receiving this beneficiary IRA, the child died. And so the money kind of followed on to that child's child, who happened to be living in Section 8 housing.
Mm-hmm.
And now that child's child suddenly received money and was no longer eligible to live in Section 8 housing.
Mm-hmm.
And it created a real problem, with her housing situation. So that's,
it'd be one thing if it was life-changing money, but
that's right.
If it's just some inheritance, some leftover assets, enough to kick you out of that eligibility bracket.
That's right.
But not really enough to change your life. That can be hard.
That's right. So, you know, this is a situation, we're describing a situation that's kind of really obscure. Clearly, these kinds of things don't happen very often, but they can happen. So, mm-hmm. So the point of that really is to say that it really pays to be thoughtful about who you name as beneficiaries and how you name your beneficiaries. And then, you know, to have good conversations with your heirs. And oftentimes when there's good conversations with heirs, then you have an opportunity to be talking with them, not just about money passing from generation A to generation B, but you have an opportunity to talk with them about values and values that are important to you and values that are important to them. The main idea there is that in that conversation, you have an opportunity to start teaching and training the next generation and working at passing along the values, which are infinitely more important than money to begin with.
Yep. And we know folks are going to have lots of questions about this, about IRAs. You know, what are some tax efficient strategies for those with substantial balances? Or how can I make sure my IRA will provide enough income throughout retirement? So that's why we want to share a couple of these resources with you at the end. We told you about the publication 590. But it's very important to just educate yourself and talk with a professional.
That's right. A competent professional who has experience in helping to plan and navigate some of those finer points,
mm-hmm.
Like that. So, my goodness, we are about at the end of the segment.
We are. But I think that was a good conversation. That wraps up our part two of our individual retirement accounts. If you didn't check out last week's, go to our Spotify page and check out part one. But thanks for listening. This was Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we talk each week about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles.
And that's right. And we have a question from a caller this week.
That's so right.
This will be new for our segment.
That's right.
So let's go to Dave.
Well, we're here with Dave today. And Dave, You're over there in Excelsior, right?
I am. Hi, Jim, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, Pennsylvania. And Eric, say hi to Eric too, because he's here.
Hey, Eric, good to see you. Good to talk with you.
Otherwise, yeah, everybody.
As well, Dave, thanks for joining us.
Everybody listening is not going to know whether or not Eric's actually here or not. So now we know that you're here. But before we dive into your question, Dave, where is Excelsior?
Excelsior is in the northeastern section of Pennsylvania. It is a small coal region town. I grew up nearby, not far off of the Interstate 81.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful part of the country, isn't it?
It is. A lot of cold water with hemlock trees and rocky terrain, beautiful mountains. It is a great place. Home of Loring Creek.
Yeah. And if anybody is ever traveling over to Excelsior, I think there's even a Walmart out there, right?
There is, and there's also a famous amusement park. We're not far from Knoebels Grove.
Oh, yeah.
They all love that spot. About and loves to bring their family, and it is a wonderful place to go as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, you had, you had a question about digital currency, right?
Yeah, I am grateful to be able to ask someone of your expertise a question like this, because I never really know the answers. I watch the news. And I'm deeply concerned about all of the back and forth discussions about if our dollar is going to remain a dollar or if it's going to become digitized. So if there's anything you could tell someone like myself, I would like to think we're going to have a dollar, but I'm scared to death that maybe we won't have one.
Yeah. Well, clearly we didn't practice this a lot before this conversation. So we'll just kind of share some of our thoughts on that topic. It is something that a lot of people are concerned about, right? And a lot of people are worried about what happens to our currency. So really, before we dive into that, I think I'll just kind of, let's think against the backdrop of history, right? And recognize that through thousands of years, there have been all kinds of different currencies throughout the history of the world. And I even forget what was currency, let's say. I mean, there was currency in the Roman Empire, right? And the Roman Empire rose and fell. Certainly, there was a lot of turmoil as that was happening, but when Jesus was walking this earth in biblical times, they were ruled by the Roman Empire, and they had, so whatever interaction they had going on, so there was currency there. And just in the interest of time here on the podcast today, years ago, of course, there was the Dutch Empire, and then the Dutch Empire, of course, rose and fell. And at one point, England was a major world player economically. And so the English pound was the world currency at that point. And so we've had a rise and fall of currencies throughout the history of the world. And it's not a comfortable thought to think about the US dollar maybe at some point receding in terms of world influence. But if it did, it's first of all, I think, really important to remember that we've had a rise and fall of currency, and people have continued to live. So, if we went over to Italy today, we would find a lot of people who are living just fine, in spite of the fact that the Roman Empire is no longer a thing. And if we went to Holland today, we would find a lot of people who are just fine, even though the Dutch Empire is no longer an empire. And the same is true in England, and so on and so forth. So, so it is true that when currency changes and when the influence, the economic influence of a nation or economic system, when that fades or wanes and when it changes, that there's turmoil. But people throughout the course of history have been through these kinds of changes, and they are continuing to live, just fine. So as a first observation, I think that's one thing, really that I would share in that. Is that helpful for starters in this conversation.
I think so. I think it's a great opening because I was envisioning like end of the world type things, you know, what to think of, you know, how it would survive. So it's nice to know that there'll be something we can at least continue with.
Yeah. So then, you know, then of course we do quickly get into a question of, wow, I'm really, really scared, you know, about what may happen in the future. And it's normal, I think, for us to be concerned about things that we've never experienced and things that we don't know about. So before we really tackle those kinds of feelings, it's important to acknowledge that they're real. And it's not something that, you know, people should not beat themselves up, right? If they feel concerned about things that they don't know anything about or that they haven't experienced yet. So, but you know, biblically, the Bible does tell us that we should not worry about tomorrow. Worry, we think, is kind of like a rocking chair in that it gives us plenty to do, but it doesn't really get us anywhere. And so the difference really, we think, between worry and planning is that planning is really a faith-based action, right? Where based on a principle, I am taking actions about preparing for tomorrow. And, you know, in the Bible, at one point, Jesus said, you know, to think about the birds of the air and how they don't toil or they spin, but still your Heavenly Father cares for them. Well, a bird builds a nest, and that's obviously planning for tomorrow. But so there's something really tangible that happens often when we worry, when we get into situations where we're thinking about dynamics that we can't control. And then it gets us into this loop, right? Eric, I think you were mentioning earlier this morning, it's easy to get into that loop.
Where with the headlines and all the scary stories that we hear every day. I told you I consume my news, you know, a couple hours a day, but some folks, that's just their whole world. And it's hard to think outside of that box.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easy. So it's really easy to get into that loop. And then we find that, again, it just uses up energy and we're not really making good, sound decisions based on principle. So, you know, we really encourage people, don't worry about tomorrow. Do plan. Make sure your planning is specific. Make sure it's measurable, that there are identifiable action steps to be taking, and that the actions that are taken are relevant, you know, to your own mission and your own goals, and that you have timetables too. You put things in place so that you can identify progress that you're making. But let's talk a little bit more, you know, digital currency and just observe that a lot of times we think digital currency, if we hear about this, like it's something that is coming in the future. But there are a lot of examples where currency is already digital, right? So you could probably name some examples. People, there are credit cards, there are debit cards, there are prepaid cards, there's even mobile apps. And
crypto, which basically is the concern, I guess, of digitizing the dollar.
Yeah. So there are a lot of examples where we are already in a digital format, if you will, and we're using methods of a medium of exchange that is not what we would think of as traditional currency. So at some level, right, we're already, I wouldn't say we're like all the way there, but you know, there's a large degree to which we are, to which we've already arrived in this digital space. But the principles, the interesting thing is that the principles of debt, for example, we know the borrower is the servant to the lender. And my goodness, we could probably spend a whole nother session just talking about debt. But those principles are true regardless of the currency that we're using, right? So if you have a mortgage, I mean, you could if you're in Japan and you have a mortgage, then the debt principal is the same as if you are here in the US and you have a mortgage. You owe to the bank, and so you have to be paying that, regardless of whatever the currency happens to be or what shape it takes, and so on and so forth. So you know, the best way really to be prepared in the face of changing details like that, we believe, is to be focused on good principles, and those principles then can change with the details, but stay the same because the principle is the same all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just ran out of outline. Dave, is that, do you have any more questions on that topic here, Dave? We have a couple minutes left in this segment, but go ahead.
No, I really appreciate that. I think you've put it in a really good perspective, and one that I wasn't considering as fully as maybe I should. And I believe the principles is something that I should have kept in mind better than I did, which I think maybe is why I got such anxiety about it. I was thinking more of the outcome than what I would do about it. And I think you've given me a better angle on how to accept it or work with the conditions.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, thank you. We appreciate you. And we are down to like the last 60 seconds in this segment. So, but we appreciate you taking time to talk with us here on the podcast. We'd love to have you back again. So just let us know of, you know, other questions that you have, and we're happy to take some time to talk with you.
Yes, thank you for being part of the show today, Dave. Thank you so much.
Thank you, fellas.
Well, that was a great call. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad he didn't ask about page 46 of publication 590B. Yeah. But, you know, to our listeners, any questions you have, just send those notes to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com or give us a call, 717-774-7200, and we'd love to chat with you.
That's right. Thanks for listening. This was Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.